Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. On today's show, Evan and I are going to talk about the Cavs beating the Philadelphia 76ers and then touch on some draft news that came out Wednesday, or at least in the last couple days. There's been some changes, and we sort of know some of the guys the Cavs are sort of interested in, so we're going to get more into that. But that's all coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
He put him in cement boots, Colin Sexton for two.
Away he goes! Locked On playoff winner!
Cleveland! This is for you!
Evan, how's it going, buddy? The Cavs are on a winning streak, to paraphrase the classic movie Old School. They're going streaking. Beat Philadelphia 108-94. Obviously, the caveats here are that Joel Embiid suffered a shoulder sprain and that Ben Simmons has his ongoing back issue. He did not play in this game, but Colin Sexton with 28 points. I think the broadcast said it's like his 28th game of 20 points or more this season. Additionally, you have this is a game where Kevin Love was only 3-9, but Nance had 13, Delly had 12. You had Thompson with 14 and 13, Garland with 12 points. Jetty was into foul trouble, not his best game. No Andre Drummond due to calf strain. But what to you were kind of the standout things from Cavs Sixers from Wednesday night?
Philadelphia is as bad as advertised on the road, and that's not even accounting the fact that Joel Embiid was sidelined with an injury early into the first, but it's kind of wild because Cleveland was walking away with this game for a little bit here, and I was definitely alarmed, to say the least. But I'm pretty happy overall. Just the production with the Cavs. Like I told you before we hopped on and started recording, I'm like, I'm kind of surprised, and maybe I got to start downplaying the Cavs a lot more and thinking they're just going to go in every game with a loss because they can come out and just exceed my expectations. And speaking of exceeding expectations, I'm starting to think maybe JB Bickerstaff is going to start exceeding a lot of Twitter's expectations as well, because
yes,
he's definitely starting to win me over in a pretty quick fashion. And I mean, John Beilein didn't do a lot to help with that, so JB doesn't have to do a lot to begin with, but no, it was a good game. I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah, let's start with Bickerstaff, because I thought I think the players clearly, if you're just going based on effort level, which we know sometimes does correlate to how bought in guys are, they've been playing a lot harder of late.
Oh,
you know,
definitely.
There's certainly that one game bounce that you get from a new coach that happens, you know, in most instances, but it seems like there's a little bit of that still there. You know, something we don't know if it's going to persist, the rest of the way, but it's certainly something to kind of keep an eye on there. And I think defensively, one of the things I think we've noticed is not only the efforts better, but I would have to kind of talk to some of the people that are organizing the defense, and he certainly is one of them, along with, I think, Antonio Lang now. But one of the things I think you've noticed is the Cavs have kind of simplified things, and that I don't know if that's like a Beilein's thing was never defense. Like, they went out of their way when he was hired to be like, this defense is like not his thing. But that was kind of Bickerstaff's kind of responsibility even then as the associate head coach, not unlike Ty Lue with David Blatt. Funny how history can repeat itself, but
time really is a flat circle with this team.
Yeah, time. I just feel like McConaughey smashing the beer can on True Detective. That's what I feel like right now. Perpetually just feel like that, to be quite honest, although not nearly as cool and no mustache. But one of the things with Bickerstaff that I've seen them do is that, you know, specifically with pick and roll coverage, you're seeing them basically play a very conservative kind of vanilla scheme. The big, you know, and I think this does make sense because they don't have bigs that are going to do a ton of damage by kind of hedging or going out and trying to switch. The Cavs are like avoiding switching at all costs now. And they are dropping their bigs back. They're having their wings and their guards really just try to defend shooters, and they're trying to avoid basic mistakes, which I think when you consider the personnel, the age of the personnel, the limitations of guys, some of the funky lineups you're playing. I mean, like, if you just want to look at pure defending-wise, if you have no Alphonso McKinney, who is still out with plantar fasciitis in that left foot, Dante Exum, who has that ankle sprain, you're down, you know, you could argue like two of the best three Cavs wing defenders on the roster. And you don't have those guys, and that's going to limit your ability. And you also just have smaller guards who aren't that good on defense yet. Kevin Love obviously is a minus on the defensive end of the floor, particularly when he's not trying, which has been a lot of the case this year. What you've seen them do is, I think, really simplify things. The players are buying in. And again, I don't think this is going to correlate to like them becoming a world beating team, but like, I think to Bickerstaff's credit, this is some, that is just something that seems to have really helped the quality of the play, the floor of this team's kind of game to game reality. It seems like that is just going to raise it in a way that maybe they're still going to get smacked around like they did against the Heat last week, but they're also going to have good performances and kind of pick up wins where maybe they wouldn't have, but otherwise could not have when Beilein was the head coach.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, like you said, just to start things off, like I do think there is a bit of a dead coach drop here with the fact that with Beilein gone, maybe the players did step up in that game against Washington, but kind of gave an early indicator of how JB was going to coach this team, and the fact that he's more than okay with leaning on the hottest players that night and like kind of what's working. And yeah, no, I think him having the respect of this locker room, especially with some of the key veterans, i.e. Kevin Love, just based on their history together, and Tristan Thompson obviously thinks highly of him. And then I think that just trickles down. Those are your two of your biggest voices in the locker room. That trickles down to the rest of the team. So that obviously helps. But no, I agree. Like, they're keeping it simple on defense right now, which I think might be the right call, especially considering that the Cavs have so many young players getting key rotation minutes that aren't really the best defensively if you look at advanced metrics. And I think that definitely does help the situation. But it's just other things, too, where JB said he's kind of like, since he doesn't have that interim tag, he kind of has the leisure to maybe experiment and get a little weird and get a little funky with things. Like, this is two nights in a row now that we've seen Larry Nance playing minutes and the closing minutes at the three, with sharing the floor with Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson. And, like, I tweeted this while it was happening. I'm saying, like, listen, this isn't like a permanent thing. And maybe since after Larry was outed for being shorter than he actually is, he can play the three, but he doesn't really have like the vertical or the lateral quickness for it. But it's working. And JB's kind of just pushing the right buttons on this team just to figure out what does and doesn't work. And another thing is on offense tonight, especially against Philly, the Cavs are running a lot of pick and roll situations, just running a lot of screens and kind of heavy offense like that. And again, I was jokingly tweeting it, but like, I think about it, and this is something we'll touch on in a later time, but like, if the Cavs can get Andre Drummond to buy into a system like that, where like it's a lot of screens with these young guards, it gets Garland going, it gets Sexton going, it's going to make Drummond's life a hell of a lot easier too if they get him rolling to the basket more often instead of him trailing and acting as a spot up 3-point shooter, which he clearly isn't. And I don't know, I'm just really surprised with how night and day and how much of a palate cleanser JB Bickerstaff has been as coach of the Cavs. And it makes you wonder, would things be a lot different at this point in the season if Kobe Altman stuck with JB, who reportedly, and from what I've heard, really knocked out all of his interviews? And
yep, there's been a lot of, I think there's been that speculation like his dad had an influence on this. Everyone that I think you would have had these same conversations, that the organization really did come away impressed with him.
Like,
went a different direction. And again, this is not unlike them going with Ty over David Blatt.
Crush that can, Chris. But it's just, I do wonder when I see like the energy level and just how kind of locked in this team is. And like you said, Kevin Love didn't, at the opening of this, Kevin Love didn't have the best shooting night, but he at least looked engaged enough. He led the team in assists with 6 assists. I mean, he had 13, 6, and 9, which obviously isn't all-star level numbers, all things considered, and especially when you're on one of the worst teams in basketball this year. But if you can get your star player like him locked in and at least engaged on the offensive side of the ball, it certainly helps make things a lot easier. And it's now just like a lot of what ifs where I sit back and think, like, what if the Cavs didn't gamble on John Beilein and let him more or less just waste 54 games at this point in the season to kind of make Cleveland fall into this pit? And then what we would have with JB, they wouldn't be a playoff team. I still don't think that, but I do think you and I maybe have a lot less to complain about, especially when things were getting that they're ugliest with the A-line.
Yeah, I will say I think there's going to be a game where, like, I don't know, you know, I'm looking at the schedule right now because I was writing up the recap as we record. And I was looking at the schedule, and I think, like, you could get the – it could be the Pelicans this Friday. Mm-hmm. It could be
– I think Boston's their biggest threat.
Well, we look at Boston on March 4th, and you look at Denver coming in and stuff. And I think there are games where, like, if you – or the Houston game kind of get to mid-March, there are going to be opponents where I think if they try this Larry Nance at the three thing against certain teams, it's just not going to work. Mm-hmm. Those lineups are still like they've barely been used. There's like this very small sample. I get the gimmick is fun. I give Beeline or Bickerstaff a lot of credit for kind of finding some stuff that works and kind of playing around with some stuff. I think that there is going to be a game where like it just goes back to how we expect it to work and it just doesn't work because it's just weird, especially like when it's just looks so weird when it's like these three bigs and then they're the two guards. It's just like looks very funny. You know, it wasn't even like the other night where it was like kind of big and long, four big long guys plus Garland.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I don't know if this I don't think this is a playoff team, but I wonder it's unknowable, it's an integral question. But I wonder if you had just, like you said, hired Bickerstaff or, you know, if you want to even go back further, like if you just acted normal and like didn't rush to fire Ty Lue and you sort of worked all that out and you just tried to like actually be stable and kind of work through the Kevin injury or whatever else was affecting you last year. I wonder if there's just like a more competent organization that is, you know, maybe at least like, even if you're like more like the Pistons the last couple of years where you're just sort of sneaking into the playoffs, something like that, or at least close to it, I wonder if like that reality is possible if you would just act normal. That is to me an unknowable question. But I feel like these four, again, they've won four out of five. Obviously the Beeline was the coach against the Hawks, but they've beaten Washington. They had that crazy comeback against Miami and then beat Philly. But Bickerstaff just seems to have them gelling in a way that is good this year. Again, I don't know what that all means, but I think it's at least interesting.
No, I agree. And, you know, I didn't even touch on this, but the weirdest thing that JB touched on after he became head coach is he wanted to have Kevin Porter Jr. play more of like a point forward role. And I think the consensus reaction was, bro, what? But no, KPJ, I mean, 2-6 shooting, finished with 5 points, but he tied Kevin Love for the team in assists, and he made a lot of smart reads and a lot of smart passes. And, I mean, Ante's a shout out to Baby Shaq for putting up 6-2 tonight in 7 minutes, but I think maybe JB isn't as big a moron as NBA Twitter led everybody to believe, and he does have a good feel for this team, and maybe the Cavs might have somebody who can, God dare I say it, bring some stability and normalcy to this team and just kind of keep things chill and low-key for a while the Cavs ride the storm of the remainder of this rebuild.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, you know, to the Cavs' credit, like, again, Kevin Love doesn't play a great game in this one. He only scored 13 points, only shot 3-9 from the field, didn't make a field goal inside the arc. You know, Jetty was, like, one of the most non-factor games we've seen from him at any point this year. KPJ scoring eruptions didn't come. Matthew Dellavedova played 25 minutes. That's, like, I'd have to go, like, through and look and see the last time he'd played that much, but it feels like it's been an eternity, and frankly, he was like the leading scorer, like at a certain point, and that obviously changed. But he played about as well as you could hope. Nance continues to play. Nance had a 13-15 night, which is just astounding from him. And you know, Zizic came in and provided 7 like energetic minutes. May have further kind of ended the 76er season, but came in and Baby Shaq looked pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this team kind of winning in this way and kind of winning a game, again, where you don't have Exum, you don't have McKinney, you don't have, no Drummond. And we're going to do a bunch on Drummond come Friday show because there's just a lot I think we need to unpack there. But for them to win a game like this, I felt was just like really impressive. And I think, you know, I think Bickerstaff has to get some of the rub from that he's kind of keeping things going and organized, and things look like they're just kind of more functional than they were like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right in that regard. And maybe another thing that's testament to Bickerstaff as well, and maybe it's just Dele had a good night overall, but this Dante Exum injury was definitely unexpected. And I think if Dante Exum was healthy, You wouldn't see Dellavedova playing if Andre Drummond was healthy. You wouldn't see Ante Zizek playing because maybe you're 3-4 guys off the bench. I mean, Dellavedova may play more sparingly. He wouldn't play 25 minutes. He'd be the ninth man in the rotation at that point. But no, JV just, I think, kind of has, like I keep saying, it just has the pulse of this team, and I don't see him letting go of it anytime soon, and I'm more than okay with that because even if the Cavs, like you said, they play New Orleans on Friday, and then John and blank on who they play Saturday, but like they have Boston coming up, they have Utah coming up, they have the Rockets coming up. I know the Spurs are on the docket as well. Like, these are all legitimately good teams and well-run teams. Like, it's going to be a rough battle, but granted, they beat a Miami team that didn't have Jimmy Butler, but Bam Adebayo is an all-star, and you have a Philadelphia team who lost Joel Embiid early, but I mean, Philadelphia is still a talented enough roster that they could be able to put away Cleveland at any point if they really asserted themselves. I just think maybe this is just a good thing to have, and I'm hope the Cavs can ride this wave for as long as they can, because I'm sure it's going to get ugly again, and maybe, like, God, it's really funny. I remember now I came on this show as a guest, and it was when Cleveland barely lost to Philadelphia, and you and I were both excited, like, oh, hey, it was a good win. They tried their best. Like, it's a 4-5 start. It's not too bad for the Cavs. And then I, like, kind of said, like, oh, well, Cleveland has a pretty rough schedule coming up soon, so the good vibes may die. So hopefully I just didn't give it the kiss of death, but these good vibes may die soon, but I hope they don't die anytime soon, because the way JB has his team operating has just been pleasant to watch.
Yeah, I think that's 100% right. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and talk about Colin Sexton, who was pretty darn impressive in this game. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavs. Hey, back here with Evan Demerle on Locked On Cavs. I am Chris Manning, one of your hosts here. Evan, Colin Sexton, 28 points. Played some of the most poised basketball I've seen him play this year. What did you think of his performance?
I thought he was great. There were times when he maybe went a little bit too Colin mode. I think you messaged me at this close to the end of the first half where he was just kind of playing erratic and like looking a little bit too much like Colin Sexton. But no, there was a lot to like from Colin. When he dropped, was it Josh Richardson really early in the game? Like, that was a really fun play to watch. And then overall, it was just pesky on both ends of the floor, was the team's leading scorer with 28 points. And granted, he finished the night with 2 assists, and that's kind of what you expect. 4 turnovers, which is what you kind of expect with Sexton at this point. You kind of have to take that as often as you can. But him being aggressive definitely helped carry the Cavs to this win, and I'm all for it. I'm very happy for it. And also, he was super, pesky defensively as well, which is something I really like to see happen going forward, because Colin wasn't a good defender last year, but he put on the weight, and he said, like, oh, I practiced defense over the summer. But now it's starting to kind of add up a little bit, where he may not be a world beater, but he at least will be annoying, and I'd rather take annoying than over, like, absolutely abysmal on defense.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think with Colin, the thing for me that I felt was just the most impressive, and I'm going to pull up a shot chart to kind of run through this, and some of this I'll need to kind of do a rewatch, because my note-taking game for this one, I'll admit, was subpar than what I normally would have. But when I think about Colin in this one, I think the thing that stands out most is just his ability to create his own shot, to get open looks, to kind of do the stuff you would really want from him, in just the sense that, like, they needed sometimes just a guy to get a bucket and a guy to create his own look. And that's something I think Garland was trying to do, did do it great, but was like trying to at least. And I think if you look at with Sexton, something that he can provide this team is he's just going to be able to create his own shot. He got shots in the rim. He got shots like right in the center of the paint. Only really took about four true mid-range shots, which is kind of low for him, but he hit the ones he was hitting were like ones where like, yeah, that's a good shot. Like, I am not a three-pointer and rim shots zealot. Like, I think obviously you don't want to force mid-rangers, but I think like it is a tool you want to have. And Colin being able to go to that pull-up, being able to go to shots off the dribble is something that matters. And when the Cavs just like needed a bucket, again, he was able to be the guy. They went and got that. It was KPJ the other night. You know, it's not Kevin Love right now for whatever reason. you know, I love Tristan Thompson, but it was a painful reminder of how frustrating he can be as an offensive player in this one when he was like trying to do a lot of scoring and dribbling into bigs, even though it's Kylo Quinn. It's just like, that's not what he's good at, nor is it really a good outcome for your offense. So Colin Sexton really kind of making a bunch of shots, playing about as well as you want, playing poised. You know, this is one of the few games where I'm not going to be like him having 2 assists and 4 turnovers. Like, it's in this particular instance with the way he played, getting to the line 9 times as well, a team high 9 free throws, making 8 of them. I feel like I can very much ride with Colin playing as poised and controlled as he did, even if it's, again, on just a night where they kind of needed him to do it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And I think we're just kind of seeing maybe Colin Sexton again. Last year, he was kind of shaky before the All-Star break. Then post All-Star break, he starts to turn things on a little corner. I don't really know the numbers off the top of my head, but like, we'll be honest, his 3-point shot abandoned him at the beginning of the year. That was legitimately concerning, but that came back. But
at a crazy rate that he just like took. Like, yeah. I remember we talked about this. He not only returned to like 40% ish 3-point shooting. I think January was, or whatever month he kind of rebounded, but he took like double the attempts. Like, he was like, it wasn't like he eased his way back into it. He just ripped off the band-aid and was like, okay, I'm gonna make threes again now.
I don't get it. Colin Sexton is just like one of those weird players where you joke about how, oh, he's a real gym rat. He's the first one in, last one out kind of thing. And like, you roll your eyes at that kind of thing because it's just an overblown narrative when it comes to athletes. And like, you just kind of say like, he tries really hard. Maybe he's not good at anything. But Colin Sexton is a legitimate baller. He can score the basketball in a myriad of ways. He's looking comfortable more and more on the defensive side of the ball. The assist, you just kind of have to like look past that at this point. Like, that's just not going to be an asset of his game. Maybe that's something he improves on this summer, but I think he's putting it together, and I'm not surprised he's Cleveland's leading scorer this year, but the way he's doing it, and in such an efficient manner as well, has just been really fun to watch, and it's just cool to see his game just kind of continue to grow and blossom when you worry that maybe he hits a bit of a sophomore wall. But no, he just kind of keeps on keeping on. And I'm sure there's going to be a frustrating Sexton game where like I feel down on him again, but he's been consistently solid for the last handful or so of games for Cleveland. And I'm definitely okay with it. Just the wave keep going. Keep saying riding the wave. I don't know why, but it's just that's how it feels tonight. We're like,
I just think when you say ride the wave, really well. I think of like, that's just the wave. And then I like the Kanye song, which I'm sorry for singing. Yeah. I really apologize to our listeners. Like, if this is like, again, like this, oh my God, I should have done that. Anyway, Colin Sexton.
Don't apologize. Our show.
No, not.
We do what we want.
I have that melody stuck in my head now, which is a tad bit concerning. Okay, so one thing about Colin that I also want to mention with the free throws. Okay, so he takes 9 free throws. I'm going to look up how many he's taking per game. But Evan, if you had to guess without looking, and this is going to be according to Cleaning the Glass coming into this game, among point guards, would you say Colin Sexton is A, in the lower third of the league in terms of drawing fouls, B, in the kind of average-ish range, or C, in the upper echelon? Which one of those three would you say he's most likely to be in terms of point guards and how often he is drawing a foul on a shot?
I'm going to say B, middle of the pack, because that way I don't feel like a total idiot if I'm wrong I'm right.
That is the right answer. So he is cool. In the 52nd percentile, 8.9% of his shots he's fouled on. That's up from 7% last year, which is in the 29th percentile in about the same minutes per game. And that's also the other thing that has really jumped for him this year. And I don't even think I'd noticed it with the eye test. This is something that, I just have missed for whatever reason, but he is according to their and-one percentage, which is what percentage of shooting fouls did the player also make the shot? So how often when he gets fouled, is he also making the shot? He's in the 76th percentile, which is pretty freaking good. Wow. At 31% of his, when he's fouled on a shot, he's also making the shot 31% of the time. That is up from 18.2% last year. This year over on just raw free throw attempts, he's only taking about 0.8 more a game. If you go that out to per 100 possessions, it's a full free throw more per game. And considering he's, you know, a like 85% free throw shooter, that's like a real, it's not like a, again, that's not like a James Harden-esque thing, but that's something in his game that I think we probably, I should say, I, for at least me and maybe the collective Cavs community, have not acknowledged enough that that is like something you, about Collins' game, that if he continues to develop that, that's just another way that he's going to become a really interesting scorer. And we, that's just a way, another way for him to kind of build out his game that we maybe haven't acknowledged before.
Nope. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think the other nice thing is, though, even the high free throw percentage, he's not hunting. I mean, he's doing a little bit tonight, I think, is at some points, but he's not like to the point where it's like Trae Young or James Harden. He's actively hunting for these.
Yeah, he's not. Steps. He's not.
He's just aggressive.
It's not art. Yeah, he's just aggressive, and he's not like doing the stuff that drives people crazy and gets clipped on Twitter.
Yeah, no, it's like it's. There are times Sexton isn't fun to watch, and that's when he's just at his most frustrating. But it's not like soul sucking where it's the Rockets turning him into a science or an equation or a science experiment. Trae Young just kind of being a little bit lazier and not using his God-given abilities. But I think those numbers are definitely middle of the pack for drawing free throws, but and one attempts, like that's definitely just testament to Collins' game, because you and I think everyone just agree that he's always going to play at 110% every single night, and he's just balls to the wall aggressive every time he's out there, especially on offense. And for him to be able to kind of just unlock a feature asset of his game, and I feel like I'm going to be wrong on this, but I do remember when he was coming out of Alabama, it was considered like an elite talent of his of drawing free throws, especially in and-one situations, and he was a solid free throw shooter. And then that's where the whole guffaw came, where even though he wasn't a good three-point shooter at Alabama, like even though he's an elite free throw shooter, maybe that translates, but clearly like it's working out where he's a solid three-point shooter again. But I have just really enjoyed watching Sexton play, and this is probably not going to be the move this year, but if he's able to fill out his offensive profile and repertoire and continue this aggressiveness, I think a transition to him as a six-man slash bench role next season, because I don't think it's going to happen this year, because I don't think JB is going to shake the starting lineup up at this point, Grant. I mean, unless it's Andre Drummond or Tristan Thompson, based on who's available or anything like that. I think the way Sexton's offensive game is rounding out is he's going to be a legitimately solid six-man for the Cavs, and I think he will have a very interested market if for some reason he becomes available. Trade talks for Cleveland. I don't know where I went there, but it's just something that popped in my head as well.
Yeah, the last thing I'll kind of say about Colin is I think the next step for him, I think overall, is going to be kind of when you look at when De'Aaron Fox made his leap. Another really fast guy. And it's not apples to apples. Like these guys are obviously different players. And I think Fox's ceiling is a little higher. I think when you look at what mid-organ, you're able to take that speed and you're able to have the game slow down where you like know when to put your foot on the pedal and go 150 miles an hour, and you know when to pull off, and you know when to kind of dictate the flow of the offense, or just like not force something. I like when you look at the end of the first half, or yeah, I think it was the end of the first half, where when Colin committed a pretty avoidable turnover, there's like 8 seconds left, and yes, you need to move, you need to go, but he just went, and he didn't really seem to have a plan. He just banked on his speed, I think, getting him to the other end of the floor, and it resulted in a turnover, and I think that's where he becomes frustrating for teammates. That's where you want him to slow it down a little bit, and there's that you can work on that. There's certainly, like, at least he was going for something. He didn't just try to waste it. You like that aspect of it, but you know, I think this was mostly, like, there's just the little stuff, and it's the kind of, but I think overall, this is the kind of template for, like, the stuff that I would want to see from going forward. Evan, as we kind of wrap up the second segment, before we get into some draft stuff, any other performances you want to shout out here?
Larry Nance Jr. was just a man amongst boys tonight with 13 points, 15 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, and he made 1 three-pointer. Was 5th on the team in minutes, and just Larry Nance has been putting together a really solid stretch of basketball, and I was one of those people who maybe poo-pooed him a little bit and maybe thought he was getting a little bit of just a free pass just because of his namesake, and you pointed out, like, he, defensively, he's one of Cleveland's best defensive players, but, like, he has been an energy guy off the bench who has just also been a bit of a glue guy. And I think if he can kind of get more comfortable with that role, and if Bickerstaff can establish him in that role heading into next year as well, like, the Cavs bench unit's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And I know I'm already looking too far ahead here, but Larry Nance has just been a lot of fun to watch, and that's my guy I'd give a shout out to. What about you, boss?
Delly. I just, again, this is going to maybe be the peak of his season at this point, but for him to play the way he did, to throw a lob to Tristan Thompson, you know what? One for old time's sake, I'm good with us seeing that. I'm very good with that.
It's a good way back Wednesday moment.
Yeah, it's a good early TBT action there from the title winners. Okay, one last break. We'll be back to talk about the draft and just kind of everything going on there as we really start heading into draft season. That's coming up next on Locked On Cavs. All right, Evan, last segment on today's show. Okay, so the news comes out via Chris Fedor, and I think the Sports Rabbi on Twitter had this actually first, but the Cavs have, led by Kobe Altman, have been scouting in urban Israel with Denny Advijay, which I'm mispronouncing it. We're going to butcher it. So if we have any linguists out there who, like, want to help us pronounce that, like, add us at Locked On Cavs. Like, this is the one time where I'll encourage you to really add us. But he's this 19-year-old 6'8 forward, plays for Maccabi Tel Aviv. Looked at his stats, he's only playing about 13.6 minutes per game in EuroLeague play, which is the higher echelon league. But in the Israeli league, where, as Trevor Magnotti pointed out, there's a rule that requires a certain number of Israeli players to be on the floor at all times in the domestic league, he's playing a bunch more. He's averaging 12.2 points, 6.1 rebounds, 2.3 assists, shooting 41.7% from three, and 56.6% overall. He's a guy that I think on paper makes a lot of sense for the Cavs. I wrote about this at Fear the Swords. You can go look at that news post over there. But I think, Evan, broadly speaking here, we're going to get into draft season. The NCAA tournament is coming up. We know Kobe Altman is going to be flying around. Mike Ainge is going to be flying around. Brandon Weems, the head of scouting, is going to be flying around. You're going to see stuff about, like, a couple years ago when it was like Dan Gilbert's at the Oklahoma-Alabama game and he's watching Colin Sexton and Trae Young. And, like, you're going to start learning about who the Cavs are sort of their eye. And it's sort of when they go to these places, these guys are sort of public figures and get sort of noticed. What are your kind of thoughts as we kind of get started here, whether it's on Denny, who, let's just call him Denny or DA. I don't know. We need a cool nickname for him or something. Or at the start of draft season, where are you just sort of at on us beginning this journey into draft season?
We could always call him the Hebrew Hammer, because that's a nickname I used to have for Omri Caspi when he was with Cleveland. And I think that was his nickname before that. And it didn't stick. So we could always try that again. But before we get started, I have heard from some sources I have within the team that the Cavs are not very interested in James Wiseman, and I think Chris Fedor backed this up on his podcast as well. So,
yeah,
a sigh of relief.
Yeah, and I think just like in getting Drummond, I don't think you trade for Drummond unless you're at least somewhat interested in bringing him back next year. You know, I think you don't do that trade. Mm-hmm. And like, there's just no reason to just like, what was the point of that? If you're just, it's just like swapping expirings for expirings, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I would be very shocked if the Cavs did not go some version of like a wing shooter type in the draft. I would be shocked if like that, if their top pick big board is like not exclusively, but like pretty close to that kind of player.
No, I agree. And I think a playmaking wing, a playmaking forward, there's been an obvious absence of that type of player in that archetype ever since one LeBron James left town. And I'm not saying our guy Denny here, DA the Hebrew Hammer, we're going to workshop some nicknames off.
If you have any good ones, tweet us, please.
Yeah, please. Like, and also to be fair, like Chris and I were actually looking at the pronunciation of his name before we started recording, and I got the Hebrew, like his name written in Hebrew, and I'm like, well, that's useless. So, Trevor Magnotti got me tuned into Denny early into the Cavs season, and I'm always just been kind of like, you know what, yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. And his numbers were definitely overwhelming in EuroLeague play, but Trevor also pointed out like he was coming off the bench from what I remember, and he is also 19 years old, but he has professional experience that's legitimate. And Trevor just kind of says, like, he's not going to be the next Luka Doncic, so don't get, like, that high on the horse. Like, this draft class isn't as talented as people or as analysts may hype it up to be. Like, it's a pretty underwhelming draft class overall. But no, I think if the Cavs had a big board, you'd put Denny at number one. Maybe Anthony Edwards just on talent alone. Like, I know Anthony Edwards does scare people, but he does. There is a reason why he is considered a top pick, but Denny is playing himself into that top pick consideration. You maybe have Anthony Edwards at the top of your board, and then you start working your way down, and like you just start looking at these wings. Like, you have Isaac Okoro, and then you maybe even be able to play Killian Hayes a little bit as a point guard, shooting guard situation as well. I think that's a player the Cavs also need to consider. But just to focus on Denny, like, I like what he brings to the table. He's a playmaking forward. He can stretch the floor. He is big enough to maybe play a little bit of forward spot situations. But again, we've touched on this before. Jetty Osman may be better suited as a energy wing off the bench for the Cavs. And if your bench rotation next year has Colin Sexton, Jetty Osman, and Larry Nance Jr., like, you're in a pretty good place, at least in terms of bench production. And then you just kind of give the reins to Denny and let him operate as a playmaking forward. And that's something the Cavs have been sorely missing as well, is just because Darius Garland has shown flashes, and I know it's probably people are getting really tired of me saying that he's been showing flashes, but if you have a legitimate playmaker, it just kind of unlocks this offense even further. Makes life a hell of a lot easier for Andre Drummond if he's still here. Makes life easier for Kevin Love if he's still here. Makes life even easier for Darius Garland and Kevin Porter or whoever is starting at the two next year a lot easier as well. And you can even plug in Denny at the two as well if you want to put KPJ at the three, but that's just semantics at this point. Basketball's a little bit more positionless, but I like what he brings to the table, and I have the Stepien scouting report pulled up, and
I'll link that in the show notes below for anyone who wants to read that. The Stepien, you should be reading them for draft stuff.
They're incredible, and like, they have it highlighted that he could be a top of the rotation or a starter, and that this is as of January 23rd of this year, and that's not too bad, all things considered, because the draft odds are, you know, flat, so it's not guaranteed. Like, the Cavs are currently tied for the best possible pick of the draft. They could fall as far as 5 or 6 off the top of my head, and you need to consider all your options, and if Denny's available at 5, 6, where Cleveland might fall, like, that's a pretty solid pickup to get, because he's just another nice foundational piece that has shown potential that could turn into possibly the best player in this draft class, just because it's such a crapshoot at the top 10, maybe 15 for players this year's draft class.
My take right now is, I think for the Cavs, it's probably like, you obviously want to control the draft. So like, this certainly isn't like an absolutist kind of thing, but I think you don't want to be in a position. I think the whole thing, if I was them with the draft odds, was I would not want to be in a position where like, you don't have some sort of say in like getting the couple guys you are actually comfortable with. Cause everyone that is smart about the draft is saying like, this is shades of the 2013 draft, which is the Anthony Bennett draft and the Ben McLemore draft. And like, if you want to just look at that draft, like, there's not a ton in the 2013 NBA draft that you like look back and feel particularly good about. To just run through the top 10 of that draft. Here it is. Here's the top 10 of that draft. And obviously like, Giannis went 15, and that's like the wild card of that. And it's like, again, no one could have predicted what he is now. I don't think even the Bucks' biggest fan there could have predicted that. Alas. Mm-mm. Okay. Anthony Bennett goes 1. Oladipo goes 2. Porter goes 3, then Cody Zeller, Alex Len, Nerlens Noel, Ben McLemore, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Trey Burke, CJ McCollum. There are good players in there. Cody Zeller is a good player. Oladipo obviously is very good pre his injury, but there are also guys in that list who flamed out a little bit. Like, Ben McLemore is just really like finding his kind of home in Houston. Nerlens Noel is, you know, just kind of figuring things out. McCollum's obviously very good, but there's like a lot in that draft where it's just like, okay. And if this draft ends up being like that, I think you want to find a guy they're actually comfortable with. And I think if you also just look at the profile of player that DA is, he is just a guy that really kind of just fits the type of guy I think the Cavs have really been interested in the last couple of years. And, you know, I think, you know, I think that predates Beilein. Like, I think that he fits the Jetty mold. He fits the KPJ mold. And those are guys that people that, you know, Kobe Altman, one of the things that I think he's done right is that he was pretty big in kind of communicating with Jetty when Jetty was in Turkey. He gets a lot of credit for building that rapport there. And he was one of, I think he gets credit for the KPJ pick, which I think maybe is his best singular move as a GM so far. So I think that's the kind of guy that makes a lot of sense. I'll be curious to see where we find out they spend a lot of games come the tournament. So just to lay how this works, so that they're in Europe now, like the EuroLeague's kind of going on now, but once and that season's ongoing, everything like that. And we'll see what happens, like this ongoing coronavirus thing, like could impact some of this. That was one of the notes in the story that like, we don't quite know like what the travel situations of for certain things are going to be like that. That's like an ongoing thing we need to be aware of, but they're spending 6 days out in Israel right now. Altman is, Gansey's been there before, Weems has been before, et cetera. And then we'll get to the tournament. I'll be curious to see like what teams they are going to be spending a lot of time on, because if you look at this, it's not like there's like, guys on, if you look at the like big boards or whatever, there's not like there are guys that are on, you know, like LaMelo Ball is obviously not playing in college. James Wiseman is not in college anymore. Anthony Edwards is in Georgia. You have a player at USC. You have another international player. Then you have, you know, guys at like Iowa State and, you know, RJ Hampton. Some people have him in the top 10, but he obviously played professionally already. Obi Toppin from Dayton, North Carolina. Like there's guys that like, A, they're not going to be interested in, and B, it's not like there's like a big contingent of guys in like a certain conference or team. So it's like really going to be interesting to see where the Cavs are deploying their leadership and their scouts to kind of who they're going to evaluate and who they seem to fall in love with for whatever reason.
Yeah. I'm kind of going through the list now. It's definitely just a weird year for the draft. Like you said, I'm looking just like on Tankathon's mock draft overall, where they more or less rank based on fit and then overall skill set of the player. Like in their top 10, they have one, two. Okay. Let's go top 15. 1, 2, 3, 4 players out of those 15 are playing international ball. Grant, two of those are RJ Hampton and LaMelo Ball. Killian Hayes is playing internationally, and Denny, as we touched on, is playing in EuroLeagues. It is playing in Israel right now. It's just a weird year for the draft. Like, I don't think the Cavs may get a franchise-altering talent. Like, you hope they do, but maybe you go with a guy like Denny, or if you go, I don't know, maybe like you go with Onyeka Okongwu, who I know Jackson Frank and Trevor Magnotti have both told me, and I've read from them, that he is playing himself in a conversation as being the top player of this draft class just based on what he brings to the table. Like, you have guys like Isaac Okoro, who's just like a defensive-minded wing. Like, there's a guy out there that the Cavs could get, and hopefully it's the right guy. Hopefully it's not a huge reach, like you said, in like that Anthony Bennett draft where they grab Anthony Bennett, who may have been their guy, but I, in my heart, thought Victor Oladipo should have been the guy. Granted, I was a lot younger back then and didn't really know the advanced intricacies of an NBA team. I just kind of went with who was the best player in college that year, and after Noel blew out his knee, it was Victor Oladipo. But it's just definitely a tough read to get, like, for the Cavs and just for any really team that's looking to get a rebuilding piece. And maybe Denny is the guy just based on experience alone that has the most star potential. But I don't think the Cavs or any team, I mean, there could be a chance they grab a star, but I don't think any team's going to walk away saying, like, oh, we grabbed the all-star in the draft. And this is something you have to look back with, like, the power of hindsight in, like, 2, 3, 4 years. Because besides Giannis, like you said, like the Bucks, and to be frank, even after Milwaukee drafted Giannis, they viewed Jabari Parker as a centerpiece in Milwaukee. Correct. And then Jabari Parker was plagued with knee injuries, and like Giannis was supposed to be the complimentary piece, and Giannis kind of blossomed and became the guy. Like, there's definitely always going to be that situation, but yeah, like, I think you're going to be grabbing a complimentary player in this draft class, and it's just going to be another nice foundational piece for Cleveland, and there's a good chance that maybe even one of these players, Cleveland aside, may not be on this team in a few years' time. Like, he could just be packaged for Cleveland to make a move to grab a star caliber player to kind of round out this rebuild. I don't know. It's just a weird year in the draft, and I'm starting to tune in a bit more to this stuff. I'm starting to read more on stuff on the Stepien, stuff Trevor writes, stuff a lot of people in the draft hemisphere writes, just based on their analysis and their more expertise in this field, just because they do this on a day-to-day and game-to-game basis with college hoops and international hoops, because I know Trevor's a big advocate of international hoops. So it's just, I'm interested to see what the Cavs do, but I'm glad to see that they're leaving no stone unturned. But like you said, I am interested to see who they will be watching like during this March Madness season, because then we'll have a clear idea of who they're looking to target when it comes draft time this summer.
Is just as we wrap up here, Evan, is there a guy that we haven't talked about? We obviously talked about Onyeka, and we talked about DA, and we've talked about other guys. Is there another guy that you've started to research that you're interested in for whatever reason?
I know people are really high on Obi Toppin, and I can understand why. Like, he's been the best player in college this year, but Trevor is the truth speaker when it comes to draft analysis. Kevin Porter Jr. being the exception here. Trevor, if you're listening, you're more than welcome to join the Hive and just admit you're wrong, but he's just not a high-end bench player. He's a legitimate star, Kevin Porter Jr. But I can see Obi Toppin falling in the draft, and for some reason I think and feel Cleveland is going to maneuver some type of trade to get another first-round pick, hopefully, because that kind of seems like Kobe Altman's MO, and I think he's going to try to unload some of these. Maybe Kevin Love around draft time, maybe there's a team that's just desperate enough to take him. And if Obi Toppin's available, like, because I see him falling just because he gives me flashes of Derek Williams. You know, if the Cavs can not spend their first draft pick on him, but pick up a second first-round pick and grab him, like, by all means, I'd be over about that. What about you? Who's a guy who's been kind of getting your attention?
I feel like the guy that I will be most interested in, if like, you know, if depending on where they fall and depending on who's available, I would rather them, instead of trying to like force a fit or something like that, I would rather them just take a guy like Isaac Okoro. Like, even if there's concerns about like what he is or like his shooting or whatever, like some of the weaknesses that are in him as a prospect, I would just rather roll the dice on like on a 6'6" wing type guy who like you feel like can help you and or you could develop and you have other options. Like, you know, certainly I think wing is just something that remains, you know, I think a particularly interesting thing for them. I think the Cavs really, really need wings. It's just something that I would continue to develop in. You know, I think if you can get to a future where, like, obviously you have this one guards, but if you can surround those guards with switchable wings and kind of build out your rotation with those kind of guys, so you could get to like Windler, KPJ, Jetty, and like another interesting prospect, and then maybe have, you know, another guy in the pipeline or something like that. I think that's a good thing to go. I think if you want to get a guy that I would be intrigued to see, I don't know what Trevor thinks of him. Him and I haven't talked about this yet, but if you look at like a slightly older prospect, if they got back into the draft in some way, like you have someone like Tyler Bay from Colorado, 6'7", 216. He's already 22, but like if you that's a guy that you're kind of interested in, like maybe that's a guy that you look at and say, okay, like maybe he can kind of come in and we can develop him or make him like a plug and play kind of guy. Because I do, again, you only have so many minutes. You don't want to like get to the thing where like you have so many guys, you can't develop them or whatever. But I do think there, you could go into next year where the Cavs have just added a bunch of wings and, or kind of don't have to spend money for agency. And that, like, if they do that, I think that's where, like, if you're going to pay Drummond and you have all these young wings that are on, like, even Jetty's on a really cheap contract, like, that's sort of where you can kind of make some of that work and kind of do funky. Like, I wonder if we see, like, in the NBA ever, where, like, in the NFL, teams will have their really cheap rookie quarterback. Like, the Browns, for example, have, like, Baker Mayfield on a really cheap contract right now. That allows them to go spend on other stuff. I wonder if with the Cavs, it's like, if they can develop really good young players at on the wing and stuff, and or guard on their guard spots before Sexton gets paid or whatever, or even sign these guys to not crazy contracts. I wonder if that allows you to like maybe overpay at like a center position or something like that. I don't know if that's like an actual thing, but I wonder if that's something that has come to mind with them. And if you just look at how they could build, I think that's the way I would do it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And actually, I'm curious now, because technically Dylan Windler will be considered a rookie next season. Do you think the Cavs would just walk away from the situation just drafting one player and say, like, okay, well, our rookie class is X player plus Dylan Windler, and then you have Jetty, KPJ, Windler, possibly another wing in the draft, and then at your, and then you just kind of figure out, and you have plenty of, you have a stable of guards at this point. Like you said, like, do you think the Cavs are just kind of comfortable in that scenario to say, like, we'll add one more player because they have so many mouths to feed? And I feel like Windler, who is a player that this front office, and at least when John Bailyn was head coach, thought highly of. I can't say the same for JB Bickerstaff, but I'll assume that he does just because I feel like this coaching staff did have a similar enough mindset while Bayline was running the show. I do wonder, like, what I don't know. Like, it's just, I feel like Windler's just kind of the X factor here. Like, maybe like Cleveland just adds one more rookie this year and just kind of stops adding talent through the draft and just kind of tries to figure out what they have and then see like where do they go from here, where they enter that phase of the rebuild where they start to figure out like who has a certain role. I don't know. That's just me thinking out loud.
I think that's right, because if you look at the roster, so you have obviously Garland, Sexton, Jetty, Windler, KPJ. So that's one, two, that's five guys right there. Mm-hmm. You can add Dante Exum to that. He'll be on the last year of his contract next year. I know that's six guys. He can kind of play some two, three lineups. You can bring back Alphonso McKinney for like a whopping $1.7 million. I don't know when the guaranteed date on his contract is, but they could like hit the eject button at any time. He's so cheap, and I know they like him, and I think having an actual vet around, even if it's like a quote-unquote younger vet, I think that's smart. I wouldn't be surprised if they just kept him, because, again, he's just such a cheap player that can at least just plug and play some minutes for you. That's seven guys right there for like three spots, and I you know, if you throw in one other guy, that's the way that I think you go and add another guy is, I think if you look at like you're trying to figure out, maybe it's a eventual replacement for Exum if he doesn't work out after next year, or it's like a McKinney replacement or something like that, where it's like you get a guy and you get a second round pick, or you get another first round pick or whatever, and you kind of stash that guy and then maybe actually utilize the G League to get that guy a bunch of minutes. And he's not on a two-way deal, but you just like have some guy, maybe he travels with the team a decent amount or whatever, but he spends a bunch of time in Canton, and then you bring him up the next year or something like that, where you control him, but he actually gets to play in the G League. I wonder if that's something they would do. It is not something they have ever done to date. I don't think NBA teams do that enough, but I feel like that could be something in play if they did want to go get a second round pick, if there was someone else that they loved, and it's not a guy that they would be drafting in like in the top 15, where like there's maybe more pressure to play him right away.
Yeah, no, I think that's the right mentality to have. You start to break things down, like adding to those players you listed, you throw in Larry Nance, I assume Andre Drummond will be back, then you add another draft pick. Like, that's 10 players already, and there's already enough mouths to feed in Cleveland. So, yeah, I don't think maybe adding another first-round pick where there's expectations to play them might be the right call for the Cavs. But, like, I agree with your mentality where you draft a guy that maybe the Cavs are high on in the second round. I know Chris Fedor said in his piece that Leandro Bolmaro is a player that the Cavs considered a first-round talent. According to Tankathon, he is 45th going to the – he's being drafted 45th to the Magic. If the Cavs are able to swing in and grab him, a guy they think highly of, and let him just cook in the G League until they kind of figure out things and make space for him, like, that's the right call to do. And I think if the Cavs are able to better utilize their system in Canton to develop players that have meaningful minutes in the rotation, like Toronto does or like Miami does when it comes to their player development, and finding young talent that can contribute to them, I think that's the right path to be on. And I think that's just an underrated asset and an underrated feature the Cavs aren't probably utilizing yet.
Yeah, I think a big key for the Cavs actually becoming a more competent and functional organization is them actually developing talent, which I think in the future, one of the episodes we are going to do is talking about organizations that we think the Cavs could learn from, think the Cavs could really, really do better at and kind of figure out a little bit. So that certainly, I think, would be a thing for them to learn from. And if they can do that, again, it doesn't have to be the Heat culture, because that's like, as Jared Dudley said on the Low Post this week, like a military thing, and that's not for everybody. But if you can find somewhere where it allows you to develop guys and kind of keep things going, that if you do lose a star young player, you can kind of have the next guy up kind of thing. I think that's a good way to look at it. Okay. That is going to be it for this show on Thursday, February 27th. Evan and I are going to be back tomorrow talking about Andre Drummond and what he has and has not been so far. I'm writing about that as well right now, so look for that over at Fear the Sword. And we'll have a bunch of other stuff coming in the next couple of days, and also two games this weekend. They play the Pelicans Friday, the Pacers on Saturday, and we'll talk about those here on the show as well. But for myself, for Evan, this has been Locked On Cavs. Have a great Thursday.